All right, we're back for the last module of the course.
Last one.
Last one, transforming the data center immersion experience. Here we are, insight and availability, back with Kenan. And the final topic, infrastructure availability.
That's right. This is probably, you know, one of the things that everybody hates, and that is what happens if something goes down?
Yeah.
How do I get the thing back up? I got all these people calling me. I got all these people that say, get this service back. So what do I do to make sure that never happens? Keep it up. That's what we're going to talk about today. But before we actually go into the demo and into just the online experience, let me show you a common scenario that we've heard time and time again, where we bring all of this stuff that we learned today and bring it all home. So let's say we have our famous application owner, Luis, and he says, you know, I got a lot of people. I've been getting phone calls from the Australian sub that says, this is not working.
It's your problem.
Fix the problem.
Your
exactly.
problem.
It's that finger pointing thing. What's wrong with it? Well, Richard's saying, hey, everything seems good on my end. And in fact, a lot of people, that's what you think. Because, hey, if I can ping that server, it must be up and running, right? I mean, we don't have these complex web tests, which now we've seen through what Michael showed you earlier today. We can make these web tests available to be able to use them. But normally, how do I tell if that service is up? Oh, I can ping it. It's there. That
must,
type of thing.
Must be user error, ID10T error, something like that, right?
Something like that. Like it's got to be. But
right.
No, the developer's like, it can't be my fault. No way. You know, I think you could do a much better job in monitoring your hardware because it's your hardware that must be bad. It's not my code.
You should maybe add some more network storage or memory or something.
Exactly.
Right?
Get a fatter pipe or whatever it
yeah.
is. I mean, Australia, I know it's a long ways away, but you still should be able to connect to it.
Come on now.
So it's got to be hardware. It's not software. Well, you know, you as the IT infrastructure admin, Sarani, can really figure this thing out because she's been through this transport of the data center immersion and says, hey, we could use System Center with Operations Manager, with GSM, and we could look and pass through those synthetic workloads that, yeah, you're right, Rebecca, we need to do a better job of monitoring. Well, give us those transactions and let's run those tests up in Windows Azure with GSM. So we'll do that. We'll set up the test. We'll have it up there and we'll see if there's a problem. We'll use global service monitoring to find out where that problem occurs. And yes, it may be in Australia. But then we'll use the APM stuff that we were talking about to find out deep down what is the actual cause of that problem. Mm-hmm. And we'll monitor this across the globe. And then we'll be able to fix it. Or we'll be able to know whether it's working or not. And the fact is that when that happens, we really can avoid that finger pointing. Because, you know, Richard found the problem. And he looked into it through APM. He said, Luis, we found the problem to your commerce app.
Yeah, well, that's when we were talking about digging into that application management part where, hey, you get it down to that line of code or the exact SQL query.
Uh-huh.
That's handed off to the developer. It's in TFS. There's not really a whole lot of confusion on what's going on, right?
Exactly. And it's hardware. I'll gladly take the blame and I'll fix it. But this time it wasn't.
Or maybe you already did fix it if it was a hardware issue, right?
Yeah, I said that automation.
If you are the rock star, you know, IT guy that's got all the automation and the services set up, it just fixed itself.
Go look again.
Yeah.
Nope, it wasn't the problem. The problem was, long answer, there was this malformed URL that was requesting a JavaScript file from a CDN node that only failed in Australia and New Zealand. So only those areas were down. And what the short answer is? Rebecca had a typo in her code, so it was developer error in this case.
The finger pointing can be not cross-pointing. It can be very quickly right to the source, right?
Right. What do they say? When one finger's pointing out, there are four pointing back at you.
Oh, watch out.
Don't get me started here. All right. So what we want to do is we want to be able to avoid that finger pointing, those 3 o'clock in the morning calls, all that type of stuff.
I'll just do this from now on.
There
saying.
You go. That Jedi mind trick is not the line of code you're looking for. All right, so once we can do that and pull all of these things together, we can really run our organization so efficiently that we can meet the SLAs and the demands of our business, expanding, contracting, all that stuff. So let's show you the last piece about it, and that is let's make sure those resources are up and available, and let's make sure we don't lose anything depending on what might happen to fail. We're focusing on now the resilient infrastructure, and that is whether I can look at the application at the infrastructure level, at the application level, at the site level, or even in the last one, the pièce de résistance, be able to burst out and scale depending on the demand resources. So let's flip over to the environment again. And as we hop on here, pause,
edit.
Sorry, I apologize. I guess we should have taken a longer break. I must be tired. All right, so let's flip back into the environment and let's take a look at how we can go through all these different little scenarios here. Like we said, we want to ensure that we have the service availability, which requires being able to, one, back up the resources, two, handle an infrastructure failure, three, handle an application failure, and lastly, handle a site failure. And then pull it all together with this nice little bursting scenario, which kind of drives everything home. Okay, so let's go to the first scenario here, and that is monitoring the status of my backup and the health here. So inside of Operations Manager, what we did was Data Protection Manager, which is our backup application within System Center, is we've integrated the console tasks into Operations Manager itself. So now I can just go into one console, Operations Manager, see my health in the system, but also perform most of those tasks that I would want to do when I'm backing up a system here. So inside of Operations Manager, we're going to show that we're looking at the Contoso Management folder for this application. And so I'll minimize these things right here. And we see the Contoso Management folder. And inside of there, we look at the Contoso Sales Application Protection Dashboard. So we've created a custom dashboard that shows what our DPM servers are doing, which one they're backing up, how things are running in my data protection management environment. And we see that Data Protection Manager is doing some work, but not a ton. But it's able to back up all the resources. Everything's going green, so I can back these things up.
So you're also compliant with the SLA, it looks like, for the service?
Exactly. So I haven't missed any backups. I'm able to restore these resources if I need to. But I also want to check, are these computers getting backed up effectively or appropriately? And in the DPM protected state, I can click on the server right here, and I can open up a window that shows me exactly what's going on with this thing. And I can bring up diagram view to see how this service is created. So it all interlinks and mixes together. And I can see that my Contoso sales application is being backed up and that it's running healthy on the screen right here. So it allows me not only to view it there, but also I can see all these different DPM tasks that I would normally do. I want to manage the protection, maybe make some changes to it. I want to also resume a protection. Maybe I stop backing up for a while and I want to turn it back on. I can do all those directly from within Operations Manager instead of having to go to a separate console. So DPM gives me that security to know that my data is backed up. So if something happens, I can recover it. And by integrating that capability into Operations Manager, I can now do it all from the same console that I view how those applications are performing.
Yeah, it helps, I'm sure, to really resolve alerts or problems or things quickly, or even make minor changes that you need to make.
Exactly, and coordinate it all together. Perfect. So that means that I'm backed up. I'm ready to go. Now, let's see what happens if something actually goes down. So first of all, I want to open up the failover cluster manager window. So we have a file server cluster that our databases are being stored upon. And inside that cluster, we're going to connect to the scale-out file server that we have for this demonstration right here. So I'm going to connect to cluster salesfs01. And salesfs01 is a file server cluster. It has a role. It's specifically serving up SalesFS, the file share. Mm-hmm. It's made up of multiple nodes, SAFS01 and 02, and these nodes right now are up and running in green. So everything's running great. The physical servers are up, the virtual machines or the SQL server, whatever is running on there is able to access all that data, and everything's running just fine. Well, let's take a look at the performance of this application. And we can see we're not doing anything on this server right now. There's no load generated, so of course everything's up and running just fine. But let's turn on a big SQL query to start generating some load here.
Is our troublesome monkey going to come out to play again?
He needs some more bananas or something, because here he comes. All right, so I have this SQL load portion of the app that's going to just start hammering this application with some load. So if we go back to the other web page here, we can see, yep, there's some load. So this thing is actually running, and it's being affected. If we look, we have two nodes. We have SalesFS, and then we also have...
O1 and O2, it looks like.
O1 and O2. And the green one, as we can see here, is O2. So that's the one that's providing the resources for this file server. Well, I don't think that anything will ever go wrong with this, but I have it in a cluster just in case. So what happens if I lose one of those nodes? Let me kill...
Uh-oh.
SAFO2.
Here
and I'm not going to do it nice. I'm not going to do a nice resume, but I'm going to just stop it. But I'm not going to drain the role. So I'm going to see exactly what happens.
This is if you just
I
had an outage, the server died.
Yeah, if
the
I went
VM
up
went
and
down.
Powered it off or anything like that,
there
it needs to be able to handle that. And so I pause it, and what we see is that even though it's paused, I'm still able to connect to that data. So the failover cluster manager was able to continuously keep that over. I may have lost a little traffic for a little while. It may have slowed down as it did the failover, but I didn't lose connection. And that's important because I need to ensure that my services are available. And with the scale-out file server and the cluster capabilities of Windows Server 2012, I will maintain that connection. Mm-hmm. So that is one important thing that if you haven't started doing clustering yet, besides just clustering your virtual machines, cluster those file servers that are hosting those virtual machines, that are hosting those database servers, mm-hmm. so that you can now provide the infrastructure that's resilient and robust for your customers there. All right, so I've closed that down. And
so we know that our backups are covered, right? And then we now know that, hey, if one of our storage nodes of our clusters goes down, right, if that fails, we're covered. So now, what else? What else? What other bases are we trying to cover?
Exactly. So what other things are we trying to do? And the next thing here is that we're going to look at SQL load itself.
Okay.
So here in scenario 3, again, under failover cluster manager, we have a SQL server called Sales SQL Cluster 01 here. So let me minimize this real quick. I'll close that one. Let's connect to this next cluster here.
Lots of clusters going on inside Transform the Data Center Immersion. So if you haven't gotten that hint by now, you probably want to start looking into it.
A good thing to do, yeah. Exactly. And I think I probably typed it wrong, but we'll see what happens. Okay, so let's retype that in there. Right-click, connect to cluster. And here we are, connected to that cluster. We have now we're going to use a new capability inside of SQL Server called Always On.
Always On. SQL that are always on. That sounds good. That sounds like a good
exactly.
one for me.
And what we want to do here is say that we have two nodes in this cluster, two different SQL servers. So if we scroll out here, we see we have SQL Server 1 and SQL Server 2. And we're running a database upon them. Right now it's all running on SQL Server 02. Well, let's pull up, again, this performance counters for that site. All right, so now let me bring up the SQL 02 server here. And as we can see, we're running the SQL service, and it's running, and everything's running great. So let's just stop that service, simulate basically a power off or crash of the device itself. And once we shut this thing down, what we're going to see is that SQL Server Always On is going to notice,
there it goes.
I lost the connection. But that connection is going to get picked up by the second server as the always-on failover piece occurs. So now what we've shown is that not only do we have the resiliency at the file server level, but we're building the resiliency at the SQL server level. So we're able to still maintain the transactions and the database is still up and running, even though we lost one of those nodes there off the service.
Yeah, makes sense.
All right.
What else can we kill, huh?
What else can we kill? Well, the next thing we're going to kill is let's kill the host. Let's kill the entire site. Let's go to the next level right here, and that is take it to an extreme. Okay, so
that's how we're going out here, right?
That's how we roll.
This is our last. That's right. Our last module. We just start turning stuff off.
Okay, so we have this application that we've been running forever, and we set up Hyper-V replica against it, and now let's see that Hyper-V replica stuff works. So I'm going to open up a window here, and I'm going to pull up this spreadsheet right here, and all I'm going to do here is hit my special server, number 28.
You got an X there.
I do, don't I? There we go.
Real close, almost.
And at this point, we can see a lot of data. But what this data is really, there's a Hyper-V replica log. We're seeing the logging of how this virtual machine is performing. And we've exposed this file to the website. And we see that we've been touching at a certain particular time. Well, we'll keep track of that time because what we're going to do is we're going to kill all the system. So let's connect to our Hyper-V Manager server. And we're here in host 04. And if we sort the machines, let's see if our sales app machine is on this box here.
Sales app 128 right there.
Here we go. There. We saw it right here. And so we don't need to go to host 03. We just connected there. If we look at the virtual machine, we can expand the replication and click on the view replication help. So underneath the virtual machine, if I just right click on it, I have this replication thing, new for 2012.
Yep.
And here I can view the replication help. So we see this thing's been replicating. It's been replicating to host 05. Normal last replication was at a specific time. So it's been working and everything's been running effectively. So I can close that. And the next thing to do is to open up my Hyper-V manager at the hoster of Hyper-V, which is host 05. So let me connect to that one. And from here, I can again find my replica guest. So that would be sales app 128. And scroll down.
It's right there.
And we see it right there at the top. So I have my replica here. It's off, obviously, because I'm replicating over. And what we'll see under status every once in a while is updating status, as it updates the replica status on the system. So the next thing we want to do is we want to
kill it, right?
Well, you do want to kill it, but we want to show that it actually will kill data. So we're going to add some extra data to it.
Oh.
So we see this replication is there. And we want to just kind of wait a few minutes so that the next things get updated inside while we're running. And now that we've waited a few minutes, we can take that data and we can kill it. So from host 05, I have the sales app 01. If I look at that sales app 01, before I do that, I want to show you one cool thing, and that is the settings of it shows me things like what's the network connected to. Because to be honest, that network at the new environment may be totally different than the network at this environment. So I want to make sure that they're connected and that everything's going to work okay when I do the failover of the system. So here we go. We got this thing replicated, and now what we want to do is we want to go back to 04, and like you said, let's kill it. So this was simulating killing the entire machine, but instead we're just going to kill that virtual machine. That way, you know, I'm not affecting anybody
else. All the people who happen to be using this right now
aren't going to beat me up when I get off stage.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yep.
All right, so I've killed that. And what will happen is that Hyper-V Replica will notice that happened and will notice that now I have the machine over here. So I've connected to host 05, and I could set up an automated orchestrator task, so it automatically turns the machine on here. But me, I want to do this in a controlled environment. I don't have the immediate SLAs that says I have zero downtime capability. 5 minutes is more than enough time for me to go look at that machine.
By 5 minutes, you probably haven't even gotten that page yet, you know?
I probably haven't, or at least no customers have called in.
No customers have called in yet, yep.
And all I need to do here is, after I connect to the machine, look at the machine and look at the network settings. Like I said, we showed the network settings were turned off, but right now what I want to do is I want to connect that to the actual physical network so I can get it back online, and then when it comes up, I can access it. So I set it to CorpNet 01, hit OK there. And at that point, I've set up the network correctly. And the next thing I want to do is I want to initiate the failover. Right click, replication, failover. At this point, the primary one turns out to be the primary one is stopped, obviously, but
right. But if you can't even contact that host, it doesn't matter, right?
It doesn't matter, it'll just pick up.
Yeah.
That's stuck over there. I'm going to say this is now the live one. Let me fail it over, bring it up, and at this point, it launches it from where it was. So yeah, it does initiate a crash. It does have that, and it may lose up to 5 minutes worth of data because we sync every 5 minutes. Yep. But that machine's up and running, it's connected to my network, it's sitting there running, and now it's finishing the boot up process. If we want, let's open the connection to it, and we can see that the VM is now running on this box. It's gone to the boot process, it's almost there, it's almost fully booted. And in a few seconds now, we'll connect back to that machine and let's see exactly if any of the data has changed within that environment, which means have we updated it? Is it still up and running? Is it still performing and surfacing the data that we expected it would be doing?
And that was that Hyper-V replica log that you had there.
Exactly.
So we could see kind of, hey, when was the last time we replicated from that file?
Exactly. So I'll give it a few more seconds here to boot up. It's booted up. And if I come back into this file right here and I do an F5 with the refresh, we can see that the data's changed. We moved up a minute. And actually, the data moved back a minute to where it was when the data was when it was recovered.
And that underlying networking, that's all been resolved?
That was resolved because I switched to CorpNet networking. I put it on the right network. It comes up with the same address. Now, if it was on a totally different subnet at the new site, then not only would I have to update its networking, maybe using DHCP or something like that, but I'd have to make sure that DNS routed to the appropriate location.
Right.
But that's all part of my failover steps, the process. This just gets that virtual machine over there and ready for me to use.
Right, yeah, and this is obviously a down, you know, emergency disaster kind of scenario, but when you do things like the software-defined networking scenarios, you can do, you know, where it's a little more planned, you can eliminate the IP addressing from being an issue.
Exactly. I can just extend that network across between the two other sites.
Right.
And then lastly, we've done the Hyper-V networking. We've done the replica. We've implemented all of these different pieces. We've done the failover clustering. We have this virtual machine up and running. The next thing we want to do is we want to be able to handle the need to scale out in case of resource contention or utilization. And here, what we're going to do is we're going to do it all on-premises. So we're going to open up the Virtual Machine Manager console and connect into our Virtual Machine Manager server and look at the different clouds that are available to me there.
Mm-hmm. In terms of infrastructure availability here, this could be a scenario where, hey, I'm out of hardware. I'm just tapped out, and I'm pretty close to capacity, and then one of my entire hosts just went down.
Exactly.
And so I'm now in a situation where it's not like I'm going to go instantly get another server.
Right.
All right, what do I do? And this is where this could come into play, yeah?
This is one place where it could come into play, or that server fails. I've gotten a new server. I added a couple more servers in there because maybe I do want to keep it all local depending
right.
on the application.
Yep.
And that application itself, though, isn't performing up to par because it's lost, because it's just too many people are accessing it.
Yep.
You know, like in the keynote at MMS we saw where the marketing CMO says, we're going big, we're going hard, and now all of a sudden a 50-time load happens on there. Well, I have resources and applications and services that are running. I need to make sure that I can meet my SLAs. So we have in this service management cloud here, we have all these different VMs that are loaded, but they're pieces of services. And a service is a construct in VMM that allows me to take one or more tiers of virtual machine templates and pool them together. Mm-hmm. And if we look at the names here, let's find the name of my particular favorite service, and that is 128. So scroll down to 128 here, and we look at what it makes up of a service. And what makes up a service is, in this case, it's a single tier service. So I only have one tier, and inside that tier today, I only have one virtual machine deployed. But the fact is I may need multiples of them. In this case, I'm not performing up to snuff. It's not accessing the resources that I need. So I need to scale this tier out. And to do that, I simply right-click on the virtual machine here, and I hit scale out. Now, what I've built in the template of the service is the parameters that I need or what happens when I do scale out that tier. How many can I scale up to? It says I'm starting at one, one's normal, but I can scale up to five if I want. It asks me things like, what do I want to give the machine name and that type of thing. Well, I don't have to worry about giving the machine name because the virtual machine name will be configured for me automatically through the service template logic that's in the service template. If we look at the settings inside that virtual machine, we can see that it does get a new name, and that name was just randomly generated from the next one that was deployed outside of there. Then if I wanted to make any changes, add a property as far as what to do when I turn this machine on or off, when I turn the host on or off, well, I'll just leave it the way it is. Next, scale out. And at this point, what we're going to do is follow the scale out parameters for that tier, which is deploy a new virtual machine. And then after you deploy the virtual machine, install the application. And after you install the application, is it join the network load balance? Is it add itself to the F5 load balancer that I have? Or what that steps are depends on the service template model that I've created. So I've got it starting to deploy, and all it's going to do is take a little time to take that virtual disk file. And as you can see, we're starting to deploy the file over bits, and it's just, you know, getting through that 20 gigs of data, running through a couple reboots to configure the application on there, adding it to the load balance web pool, and letting it go. So that is the beauty of the ability to scale out applications as they need it. And you can use tools like Operations Manager when you're monitoring it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the resources, kicks off a runbook that kicks out a scale out operation.
Very powerful stuff, very much so.
All right.
Wow, so that is, you've now gotten a view of killing a bunch of different things and how you can address those, right?
And so, maintaining resources when that happens, exactly.
That's right. And then, scaling out. I mean, this whole course of this day, we've seen a whole lot. Hopefully for you, you can find some different scenarios that really resonate even more with your business. And like we said, you know, at the start of this, hey, you know, you don't need to do all of this, right? You know,
exactly.
You can pick and choose scenarios within this day that makes sense for you, and, you know, start one at a time.
Yeah, you can do these serially or in parallel. You start with the infrastructure foundation, put management on top of it, or, hey, if you have a foundation already, put some management up there, build the applications, and then make sure you can run them. And we walked through a lot of different things today, from flexible and resilient fabric through a resilient infrastructure. And through the day, we showed you how to do things like create self-service and automation. We showed you how to look at the insights to that application, how to use GSM to monitor it, how to really build an infrastructure that the CloudOS will give you that will allow you, heck, to sleep easy at night because you know that you're taken care of.
Right, and from the business side of the house, hey, you can have a confidence when you go out and you deploy this type of solution that, wow, I'm getting a really good return on my investment with the resources that I have, and that I also have that agility to scale out as the business demands come.
Exactly. Yeah. So we talked all about how we moved from the infrastructure foundation through the management layer, deploying those applications and services, whether on-premise, whether in your hosters, whether up in Windows Azure, or across them in a hybrid model, and then maintain that insight and availability so that your end users, your business owners know what they're using, you are ensuring that those resources are up and always available. Mm-hmm.
Next steps, well, hey, you know, I know that as the course of this day, we've kept it fairly high level, which was the intention, right, to give you ideas of all these different scenarios. If you really want to get into the further depth, right, you say, hey, I want to really do this scenario, you know, there's a lot of different resources that are out there. I mean, of course, TechNet's a great general one, but at an MVA specifically, we have some courses that will give you more depth in different areas. So, for instance, we have a private cloud course. We have ones on the various components within System Center. We have a number of courses as well on Windows Server 2012 and Windows Azure. It's really a great guided learning experience as exactly. you go through there, just like you've had in this course today.
You can download the trial versions of the software, but also we have a private cloud evaluation guide that you could download and follow the steps that build an environment very similar to what we were using today.
Yep, and if you have questions, you know, there is a TechNet forum that's out there. Of course, we have support across all of our products, so once you get into production, you know, you can go through your general support channels that you have perhaps in your organization, or, you know, like Microsoft, we've been doing support for a really long time. Another one of really strong things that we have at Microsoft of just knowing how to do support, right?
Exactly, yeah. exactly. So thank you very much for spending the day with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming and watching and hanging in there through all these modules. And hopefully you really enjoyed what you've seen.